Hey, everybody. This is Chess Griffin, and welcome to Linux Reality. This is episode 52. And in this episode, we're going to talk a little bit about wireless networking. It's going to be kind of, again, sort of high level, just to kind of give you some basic concepts, some basic things that that you may need to think about when you know, trying to do wireless with Linux. It's really hard to talk about a lot of specifics about specific cards and specific things because everybody's got different hardware. So, but I've been doing wireless in Linux for a long time, and so I've had to run into just about every issue, I think. So I just thought I'd kind of talk about some of those things. I also got lots of really great audio feedback and some audio questions and some tips and things like that. So we got a lot of good stuff to get to. I think it'll be a lot of fun. So we might as well just get right to it. Okay, wireless in Linux can be a real pain. Just have to say it. It's to be frank about it. But you know, the problem is because it's not because of Linux. It's because of the hardware manufacturers. They refuse to release specs for their cards, and they refuse to release drivers for their cards. And when you've got a piece of hardware that's completely closed up with no documentation and no drivers and nothing to work with, how are you supposed to make it work? I mean, it's incredible that it works at all, frankly, because the hardware vendors are very, very uncooperative for some reason. I don't really know why. I don't really get it. I don't really understand wireless cards. I mean, it's like, you know, I mean, they make it seem like it's rocket science or something. I don't know. But I got to believe that they're all basically doing more or less the same thing, maybe just slightly different ways. But in any event, that is the state of affairs. So, the thing is, there's several things to consider here. First of all, of course, is which card do you have and what driver do you use for Linux? Now, there are some cards that are just flatly not supported, and there's just no way to get them supported. And there's lots of different places to go to look for documentation on wireless cards. Again, as I've mentioned in the past before, I always start with the distribution that you use. So if you're using Ubuntu, you know, check out the Ubuntu forums and the Ubuntu documentation. If you're using Gentoo, you know, check out the great Gentoo wiki. Start with your distribution because you'll run into users with same hardware as you, and their experience is going to be, you know, much closer to yours. But there's an assortment of different types of chipsets, and it's very confusing to figure out exactly which chipset your wireless card has. And not only that, which revision. Sometimes you'll run into issues where only one revision will work or something. For example, I've got a little D-Link USB wireless dongle, and I think it's the G122 or something like that. But anyway, it's a little wireless USB dongle, and it's like they've had four revisions, you know, firmware A, B, C, and D or something. And only B will work in Linux. The other three do not. I think that's right. So, you know, you run into things like that all the time. And so you just really got to be careful. And if you're buying a card new, you know, it's hard to find out. I was just at a computer store just yesterday because I was trying to find a wireless PCI card. And I had narrowed it down to a handful of, I had been doing a lot of research on them. I narrowed it down. And so I went to this computer store and I was looking at the boxes, and a couple of the boxes have the revision or the firmware label on there. So that's helpful, but some don't. Linksys, for example, nowhere on the box at all. I mean, you can see the model number, but you can't see the chipset or the revision or the firmware or anything. So it's very unhelpful. So, your options are essentially that, you know, hopefully your wireless card is supported natively in Linux. And if it's not, then you've got a few options. For example, if you have an Intel-based chipset, if you have an Intel card like a 2100 or 2200, the 39, 45s, whatever they are now, I used to have a 2200. Those are very common cards, especially in, you know, I mean, the built-in mini PCI cards and laptops. You know, there are free and open source modules for those cards. Well, I should say those modules are now part of the Linux kernel. But that's only half the story. With the Intel cards, for example, you've still got to download binary firmware. You've got to go to the Intel site, and you've got to download the firmware, and you've got to unpack the tarball and put it into /lib/firmware before it will work. So, you know, you think that you've got a, you've got an open source driver that works out of the box in Linux, but it doesn't. Other chipsets, other cards may be using the MAD Wi-Fi package. I know with my ThinkPad, my T42, it's got the Atheros mini PCI card, and that uses the MAD Wi-Fi in Linux. Now, that also has a binary component. It's not 100% free, so that usually is not included by default in most Linux distributions. In fact, the way it's been restricted, it actually, even the module cannot be included as part of the Linux kernel ever. Now, Ubuntu, once I enabled the multiverse and the universe repositories and all that, it picked it up just fine and installed the MAD Wi-Fi, no problems. I also got it working on Debian with no problems. So, you know, you've got, you know, the chipset, you know, you've got to find not just the, you know, the driver, if you will, but, you know, how to get it set up. So, you know, for example, in my two examples, that Intel one, the module and everything worked just fine, but I had to download the firmware manually. In the MAD Wi-Fi example, you know, for some distributions, it did it automatically, like Ubuntu, once I enabled those restricted repositories. In Debian, I had to download something and build a module, even. It didn't even include the module. Like I said, it won't ever be included with the Linux kernel. So, you know, it's really difficult when you're, you know, when you're trying to find vendors and chipsets that are friendly. Now, some of the ones that I've come across that are friendly, again, I think the Intel chipsets are very easy to use because, again, the module is included, and all you got to do is download the firmware and put it in /lib/firmware. That's not very open source friendly because you're dealing with a binary blob, as they say, you know, a completely proprietary piece of firmware that's in your system, but it works really well. I have found the MAD Wi-Fi is also to work really well. I think there's also Prism chipsets, Prism 54, I think it is. I've never had one of those cards, so I don't have much experience there, but some of the older cards, like the Orinoco cards and things, those work really well. Unfortunately, I think a lot of those older chipsets are 802.11b only. There's no G, and they may not have you know, the latest encryption and all that kind of stuff. They may have only WEP, WEP. But you know, if you just need basic web surfing, like at a hotspot or something like that, if you don't care about, you know, or if you're someplace where there's not going to be any encryption anyway, some of those older cards, if you have a PCI slot in your laptop, work really well. But, you know, again, it's just kind of hit or miss as far as finding out which cards to get, you know, based on the firmware, because it really, it just changes so much. And so the main point I wanted to make here about the hardware side of things is that you've got to do the research first. You know, it's really hard to recommend one specific card because, again, there's different versions, different firmwares. You know, and it really is a pain. It really is, frankly, a pain. But again, I don't believe, the way I view it is it's not the fault of Linux or anything. It's these, you know, chipset manufacturers, they just refuse to, again, release documentation or, you know, or play nicely. But, you know, in my experience, the Orinoco cards, the Intel-based wireless cards, and more recently, this Atheros card works really well. I think the Raylink, R-A-L-I-N-K cards are supposed to be really good. In fact, I think those drivers are completely open. I believe that's right. I mean, I think you still have to go to their website and download a tarball or something. But I have seen many people have great success with the Raylink cards. You know, just as an aside, you know, there's an interesting thing here. I think I mentioned last time that I was just kind of playing with some BSD distributions on the side. I shouldn't say distributions, some BSDs on the side. And one of them is OpenBSD. And OpenBSD has a really interesting stance. They're really against these binary blobs, you know, like this firmware, like with the Intel cards, for example. They don't want any binary stuff, any proprietary stuff in their system at all. So they have taken on the task of trying to reverse engineer some of these chipsets, which is an incredible task. They've attempted to contact manufacturers to get documentation, and I think in a few cases they've gotten some, but in other cases where they haven't, they've just hammered at them and tried to reverse engineer all the software that's needed to run the card. And this Atheros chipset is a perfect example. In Linux, like on Ubuntu and Debian, I've got to deal with this MAD Wi-Fi package, which is partly free, partly not. You know, and I've got to download that manually on Debian, and I've got to enable the restricted repositories in Ubuntu. But in OpenBSD, that thing is completely open source. They've completely reverse engineered that chipset. It's got WPA. It's got everything, and it works great. And when I installed OpenBSD on that laptop, it just worked. I mean, I didn't have to do anything else. So it's really kind of interesting that at least that BSD has got some better wireless support in a way, not in other ways, but in some ways. And I really have to sort of tip my hat at them and acknowledge the fact that what they say, you know, they make very strong points about this binary stuff, and it really makes sense. And so I'm hoping that in Linux, it'd be really cool to see some of the developers, real hardcore hardware developers, really work on trying to reverse engineer some of these drivers. I think it would make our life a whole lot easier. Okay, so that's the hardware side of it. Now, the software side, as far as configuring and doing WPA and, you know, and all that kind of stuff, obviously it's going to depend on your distribution. I mean, and depends on your desktop even. I mean, I know in GNOME there's a network tool that lets you enable and configure network cards, including wireless cards, and same with KDE and the KDE Control Center. I know there's a place where you can do that. And, you know, a lot of people now are using this new network manager thing, this little, almost like a little applet that sits in your taskbar. I think there's one for GNOME, and I think there's one for KDE to manage your wireless networks. So, again, you know, it's going to be different for different setups for different people, but essentially, basically what you're doing is you're either going into one of those graphical tools to enable the wireless card, and in some cases enable, you know, your security settings, your encryption, if you're using encryption, or using the command line. And I have often used the command line to configure my wireless cards, and I have just found it to work pretty well for me. But there's two main tools that you will need to use in the command line, and one is ifconfig, and that lists all your Ethernet devices, all your network devices. And then iwconfig is a specialized tool for wireless cards only. And usually your wireless cards are going to be designated as WLAN and then a number. But sometimes, just depending on the distribution, sometimes they will show up as ETH. So you may have a regular card as ETH0 and a wireless card as ETH1. Just depends, but you know, you should be able to, if you do iwconfig, that will list only your wireless cards. Now the LO, if you see the LO device, that's your local host or your loopback device. That's just kind of like a device representing the system itself or when it talks to itself, but otherwise you can just kind of ignore that. Now I know that if you're using this network manager tool, this new tool in the taskbar as a little applet, you've got to do all your configuration there. In fact, it's my understanding that if you try to mess with it on the command line, it'll screw up that network manager. And even going further, what I think you've got to do is you've got to go into, there's usually a file somewhere. It's often in /etc/network/interfaces, I think, on Ubuntu and Debian-based systems. I think that's right. Where you've actually got to go in and you need to make sure you comment out all the lines except for the ones dealing with your loopback device, your LO, which are usually the first maybe one or two lines. I think you're supposed to keep those uncommented and then comment out the rest, because in other words, that file contains your configuration settings for all your devices. But if Network Manager is managing them, it does the configuration of them kind of on the fly, you know, on its own. And so in order for that to work, the file that lists sort of, you know, your hard-coded settings, if you will, you can't use that. So you can't do both. So you've got to use one or the other. That's my understanding. So, but the network manager, I have used it, and it works really well, especially for all the security stuff. If you're going to use either, I think it does, I don't know if it does WEP or not, but I've used it for a WPA. If you're going to use that and the network manager doesn't work, there is a package called WPA Supplicant. That's usually available in most software distributions, and that's a little command line tool to start that up. And the configuration is actually not that complicated. It may seem like it, but you've got to basically create a configuration file, and it's usually /etc/wpa_supplicant.conf, and in that you put things like whether or not you want it to scan for your base station, whether you want it to, you know, what the ESS ID is, which of course your you know, WPA encryption key is. There's various other settings, and the website for that project is really good. I mean, they have a sample configuration file there that really should get you started. But like I said, I think a lot of people nowadays are using this network manager little tool, which seems to work pretty well. But the command line tools, you know, have always worked for me. Speaking of command line tools, another command line tool you may need to use for your wireless car drivers themselves is NDIS Wrapper. And I should have mentioned this a minute ago, but NDIS Wrapper is a little program that basically uses the Windows drivers, your Windows wireless card drivers, as and sort of wraps its own code around it, its own Linux code around the actual Windows drivers, and tries to let the two talk to each other. So it lets the Linux system talk to the Windows drivers. And there's lots of documentation on how to install NDIS Wrapper. So again, I would go to your distributions documentation and take a look for it. But essentially what you're going to do is you've got to make sure you've get your Windows drivers, and they're usually, you know, on the CD that maybe came with the wireless card, or sometimes you can download them from the manufacturer's website, unpack the zip file or whatever it is, and there should be a folder in there with a bunch of files that are all .sys and .inf. Those are the drivers, the actual drivers. I mean, you're going to see all this other stuff on the CD, but like the setup.exe and the manual and all that kind of stuff. But you've got to sometimes drill down into some of the subfolders. But you should come up with one that's got drivers with a lot of .sys and .inf files. Those are the drivers, and those are what you want to copy over to your Linux computer. So, you know, if you need to boot up into Windows, use a USB key, copy the stuff over, boot back into Windows, and move the drivers back off the USB key. That's a good way to do it. But put them in a folder somewhere on your Linux system, and then, you know, and make sure your NDIS wrapper software is installed through your distributions repositories, and then go into a terminal. You've got to open up a terminal and, you know, do a CD, a change directory, into the directory where you've downloaded those files, and do NDIS wrapper -i, and then the name of the .inf file that corresponds with your card. And that should install the drivers. And to check, you can do NDIS wrapper -l, and it will say whether or not the drivers are installed and present. And then once you've got that working, then you need to do a modprobe NDIS wrapper to load the NDIS wrapper module. And then you can check, you know, do a LS mod to make sure you could see the NDIS wrapper module loaded. And then you should be able to configure your card. And then the last step is to make sure that the NDIS wrapper module is loaded when you boot. And that depends on the distributions. Sometimes you got to put it in /etc/modules. Sometimes it's /etc/modprobe.conf, I think. I forget, but there's different files. They're almost always in etc, where you can list modules that you want to have automatically loaded on boot. So you just need to check that out. So the WPA works well. You know, it's, again, it's sometimes a pain to configure. If you can get the network manager to work, then that's the way to go. The only problem with the network manager is I don't think it will work with static IPs. It only works if you use a DHCP, is my understanding. But other than that, it does work pretty well. But if you need to use the command line, then you need to use the ifconfig and iwconfig to actually activate and bring up the card. You know, you do like an ifconfig up WLAN 0. I think that's right. Gosh, it's been a while. I think you do ifconfig WLAN 0 up, for example, will bring your wireless card up, and then iwconfig WLAN 0, and then you can enter in a bunch of settings. Like, for example, you know, you do iwconfig space WLAN 0 space ESSID space, and then the name of your SSID, and that will, in, you know, sort of assign that SSID to the card. But those work pretty well as well. And then the command line tools for NDIS wrapper and everything else. So I know I've sort of been kind of all over the place with this because, again, this is I've been trying to cover this topic for a long time, but it's actually a hard topic to cover because everybody's situation is different. And, you know, some people need to use the Linux drivers, you know, like your Intel stuff or the Mad Wi-Fi or Prism. Other people need to use NDIS wrapper just to get the stuff loaded and, you know, to get the card functioning. And then some people use WPA and some do not. Some people use WEP, some do not. Some people use the network manager and some do not. So it, there's a lot of variation there. But those are sort of some of the big topic issues that come up with wireless. Again, it's sort of probably a 75% success rate overall for wireless cards in Linux, I think, which is not bad considering that you get no help from the manufacturers. And but in the, when you're in the market for a new card or you're considering buying a laptop, you've really got to do the research. That's what it boils down to. I think with wireless more than anything else, you've really got to do the research because, you know, sometimes it's a hard to change cards or, you know, you don't want to, or, you know, you don't may not want to open up your laptop to change the card and that kind of thing. So, you know, you just need to really make sure that the hardware works and do that in advance. That will save you a lot of grief down the road. So hopefully you have found that helpful. And I think with that, we're going to move on to a couple of listener tips.
Hi, Chess, this is Robert from New York City, and I have a listener tip about getting your iPod to sync with Amarak. I had my iPod was originally formatted for the Mac PowerPC format, but I realized that if I wanted to get to sync with Amarak, I had to put it into the Windows or FAT32 format, which also works with the Mac. So you just go to a Windows PC and install iTunes and reformat it, and you just click the restore button, and that should be... That's probably the only way I know, but it seems to be working perfectly, and it lets me run iPod Linux also, which is a really cool project. Another thing about MP3 players is I had a question on them. If anybody knows a good MP3 player that does not support DRM and also has voice recording capabilities, just let me know. All right, thanks. Bye.
All right. Well, thanks very much for that. As to your question there at the very end, I have both an iRiver, one of the older iRivers, the iRiver 790, I think it is, and I also have an iAudio 5. And both of those, iAudio is by Kwan, and iRiver's by, I guess it's iRiver. But those are great devices. They both support recording. And in fact, I recorded my earlier episodes, my early episodes of Linux Reality on my iRiver. They don't support DRM as far as I know. I don't think so. And they play AUGs, both of them do, and they play MP3s, and they're both fantastic little devices. I highly recommend them both. The really nice thing about the iAudio 5, at least the later versions, is that the firmware is just drag and drop, because, which is just fantastic. One thing that has always bugged me about some devices, and it just drives me nuts, is that for some devices you buy and you've got to like install software on a Windows machine to install the firmware updates, or it will only work with Linux. I mean, with Windows. And that just, that drives me crazy. And it initially the iAudio was like that, but I think at some point one of those firmware updates changed the firmware. So all future updates is just a little bin file that you download and you just drag it over into the iAudio. That is really cool. That's the way it should be. I mean, everything should be, you know, universal mass storage devices, drag and drop firmware, all that good stuff. So check out both of those players. I think you'll find a lot of good stuff there. And there's, you know, you can buy older ones on eBay for really cheap. And I think some of the newer iRivers are not as Linux friendly as they used to be, but I think there's ways around that. So good luck.
Hi, Chess. This is Ken calling in with a quick tip from the Netherlands. My tip is on SSH port forwarding and how to make it a lot easier. In episode 51, you explained how you were going to securely connect to your VNC server using a port forward on the command line. What you used was SSH-L 5902:192.168.1.50:5901:192.168.1.50. Now, using the -L method becomes quickly very impractical. Fortunately, however, SSH comes with a very easy way to automate port forwarding using the config file. The file itself is called config and is located in the .ssh dir in your home folder. For more information, type man space ssh underscore config. Now let's edit the file itself so that we can do your example. Let's call your server VNC server. The first line reads host space VNC server, and host has a capital H. The next line has hostname space 192.168.1.50, and hostname has a capital H and N. Then the next line has local forward space 5902:192.168.1.50:5901, and the L and the F of local forward are capitalized. Now save the file, and from the command line, all you need to do is type SSH space VNC server, and it will read the file, connect to 192.168.1.50, and it will establish the port forward, forwarding port from the local machine 5902 to the remote machine on port 5901. I think that makes life a lot easier. Couple this with tips you gave on SSH key sharing in episode 37, and you will be able to log in using pre-shared key. Now, I always recommend that you use a very long password on your SSH keys. However, I don't always want to be typing that in over and over again. So what I tend to use is a little program called SSH-add, which I enter in the first time, put in my very long password, and then when I type SSH space VNC server, it will take my password that I've already previously entered and pass that into the keys, and I will be able to log in without having to retype in my username and password. I also use a tip from the LottaLinuxLinks.com podcast, episode 8 from Dave Yates, where he describes how you can use a script so that instead of having to type SSH VNC server, you just simply have to type VNC server and it'll automatically connect over there. Well, that's my tip. I hope you enjoyed it and really like listening to the show. Tot ziens and bedankt. Sláinte na bhaile.
Excellent, excellent tips. Thank you very much. That is really great stuff. I hadn't really played much with the SSH config file. I mean, you're right about putting in the dash capital L and all that kind of stuff makes it very unwieldy. And what I normally do, I didn't really get into this because I've kind of mentioned in the past, is I'm a big fan of aliases. So I have a bunch of aliases in my bashrc file, my .bashrc file. And for all kinds of things, for just for SSH sessions in general to various servers, as well as some VNC stuff, and so I kind of cheat that way. but I like your way of doing it. It sounds like a better way to do it. So, you know, I got a lot of feedback on the VNC episode just last week, as well as some SSH stuff. So here is another one right now.
Jess, this is Corey from Indianapolis. Hey, I was calling about your message regarding VNC and specifically secure shell and local port forwarding. You had in your notes that you could use localhost for the local port forwarding, and you are correct. When you do local port forwarding, the first port number obviously is for the person calling the SSH command. Then the host and the port at the end are resolvable by your server. So, for example, I've had times where I wanted to remote my father's machine at his work when I was at work behind our corporate firewall. I knew that my home machine could resolve his name to port, and so I would open a local tunnel from my work machine to my SSH server at home, and on that local I would say, for example, 3390:  father's IP :3389, because I knew my home server could resolve his address and get to that port. So hopefully that was clear enough, and appreciate all the work that you're doing, Chaz. You are hosting a wonderful show, and I have referred several to you, and they have derived great benefit therefrom. Thanks a lot, guys. Have a good one.
Excellent, excellent. Another great tip. Thank you very much. I've got one audio feedback. Let's play that now.
Hi, Chaz. My name is Santiago. I live in Denmark, but I'm actually Colombian. Don't ask me what I'm doing here. It's a long story. But anyway, I've been listening to the podcast for about 9 months now, almost since the beginning, and I really, really enjoy it. Congratulations. I mean, 50, that's amazing. The podcast has helped me a lot. I started out with SUSE 9.3, and then I got sick of it and installed Ubuntu, which is actually a lot easier. And, well, probably like most of the people out there, I have to use Windows at work. But I really enjoy using Linux here at home. I've been Windows free for almost 2 years now. And I found this tool that's very, very useful, especially for us newbies. It's called Cygwin. That is C-Y-G-W-I-N. The website is cygwin.com. And it's really cool because it's a Linux-like environment for Windows. So it's really nice because you get to... What I did is I installed it in my computer at the office so I could have... For example, VI, which I'm really learning a lot and enjoying it, and some other like free software things that are really, really hard to get on Windows. I use a lot Nuplot, which is a very nice tool to do some nice plots, and Octave, which is a MATLAB clone. And well, I think I'm not sure if that's a listener tip, probably not, but it's. It's probably something that the people out there would like to hear about. And yeah, well, that was it. And thanks again for the podcast. It's really, really good for us. And my wife, she loves it. She actually asks me every day if there's a new episode of the podcast. So yeah, keep up the good work, and I'll see you around. Bye.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad that your wife enjoys it as well. So that's very cool. And that's really nice of you to say, and some good thoughts there and some good input. Yeah, the Cygwin project is one that I've used from time to time. I haven't used it much lately, but it does work really well. It is pretty cool how you can have pretty much an entire command line experience right from within Windows. And you've got all your good old, you know, command line tools right there ready to go, and works great. So thank you so much for taking the time to record that and send that in. And I think, folks, that is going to do it for this week. So it's about time to wrap it up. Okay, well, that's going to do it for this week. Sort of a, I guess maybe a little bit of a rambling discussion about wireless. I had all these really organized notes and had all sorts of stuff. I think I hit all the things I wanted to say, but maybe not in the most organized fashion. But I think essentially what it really comes down to with wireless is you really got to do some reading. This is one of those things that is not just plug and play, like it might be with Windows, because the manufacturers just are not making drivers, and they're not releasing specs, and they're not releasing documentation. So there's only so much that the Linux, that the open source community can do. So you really got to, you know, do some reading and learn what cards work with your distribution, and really make sure you know which, you know, revision level or firmware or whatever for the card that you're thinking about buying. You know, make sure you can figure out what that is. So Newegg, by the way, is a great site. Not just for stuff in general, but the reviews there are really good. And sometimes you'll find people. Sometimes when I find a piece of hardware I'm looking for, I look at the reviews, and I just do a find on the page for Linux and just see what people have to say. Because a lot of people post stuff there about you know, a particular piece of hardware, whether it's supported in Linux or not. So anyway, enough rambling for now. Hope you have a good week and a good weekend. Please email me at linuxreality@gmail.com or call the hotline at 206-338-6359. And I've got a little bit of a cold, so hopefully I'll be fully recovered by next week. But in the meantime, I hope you all have a good one. Take care, everyone. This has been episode 51 of Linux Reality. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.